It's time for today's episode of the UGA Sports Live Podcast, recorded in front of a slightly tipsy studio audience at world-famous Champions Fried Chicken. We will have the latest on Georgia Bulldogs football, basketball, and recruiting. Watch live and send us your questions on the 11 Alive Sports page on Facebook. Be advised, this podcast is off the record and not safe for work. Also, be sure to subscribe to the UGA Sports Live Podcast on iTunes and Google Play.
Welcome to this week's edition of the UGA Sports Live Podcast. I'm joined today, as what will be usual, by Jake Roos and Paul Meharry. My name is Roddy Nabulsi. I'm the publisher of UGA Sports and want to thank you for tuning in. Every Tuesday at 8:30, we try to record the rehashed, rebranded, well, not rebranded, but reborn UGA Sports Live Podcast. Back when Steve Patterson did this, actually started doing a podcast, it was the first one in the market, and we did hundreds of them. So we're going to call this episode 502, because we're not sure exactly how far we're into it, but it's been pretty good. So anyway, thanks for listening to the show, and you can download it, and you can subscribe to it. We got it set up for iTunes and Google Play. So you can go ahead and subscribe on, with the RSS feed, and it will let you know every time we have a new episode for you to listen to. So just be sure to check it out every week. We're doing it live from Champy's World Famous Fried Chicken. Got my order in for my tamales and my chicken fingers. Because they're not chicken fingers. They're more like chicken legs.
They really are.
It's like he takes a turkey breast and cuts it in half and goes, oh, yeah, here's a chicken strip.
It's gigantic. Make sure, hey, it's G-Day this weekend.
This is the place to be, man.
This is the spot to come.
No question.
Come here before, come here after. If you want a place to sit and watch it.
Yeah.
And cool out and drink a big beer, this is the spot for you.
It's a 2 o'clock game,
Yeah.
If you come by, make sure you ask for Josh or Amy Collins. Tell them Paul sent you. You'll get nothing, but they will smile at you.
They might hurl one of those 40s at your head.
Yeah. It's a 50-50 chance you get to stay. I'm Paul Meharry, by the way. I was not here last week. This will be kind of the regular thing. And Jake Roos along with us as well. Jake, how's it going, my man?
I'm doing well. Just chucking along to G-Day, man. I can't believe it's almost here. It feels like, honestly to me, it feels like we just wrapped up the season. So
we had G-Day in 4 days. I mean, that's going to be another G-Day. I mean, I don't want to say it's going to be great because – we don't know what we're going to see. I mean, last year there was all the excitement. Will they get 93,000? Will they won't? That was a big deal.
Oh, they did.
It was the first chance to see, you know, Jacob Eason. It was the first chance to see, you know, Isaac Nott and some of the other guys.
Kirby Smart.
You know, Kirby Smart was here, exactly, a whole new staff, and everybody was just it was at a fever pitch in the spring.
Yeah.
And, you know, especially coming after the whole, you know, Mark Richt firing and all that. This year, you know, after an 8-5 season, people are a little, I don't want to say they're leery of it, but they're just, that same excitement wasn't there because, I mean, nothing like the first season.
Well, yeah.
You'll never get that. But this year, it's not going to be the battle between this true freshman and, you know, early enrollee freshman and a fifth-year senior in Hudson Mason. Now, think about it. When you have the offense, you're going to be watching, watching Grayson. I just spoke to Hudson. That's why I was thinking about it. You're going to have a situation where you have Jake Fromm come in and compete against Jacob Eason. So whenever the offense is on the field, which is, you know, every play, you're going to have one guy that you get to watch and be excited about. But I just don't sense from the fans that pure, absolute excitement.
Yeah, that's true. And I think that it's, like you said, there was so much unknown last year, and that created and drew so much into this. And there was the challenge issued by Kirby. And I will say, you know, Georgia –
oh, and a concert.
Yeah, that's true.
Boy.
And there was, you know, there was this sense though that like, what were you going to see? What was this? You know, what was the spectacle? How's it going to be different?
You didn't know what Jim Chaney was going to do.
Yeah, it'd been 15 years since you'd seen anything different at a G-Day. So how was it going to be different? I will say, you know, Kirby has mentioned this week that they are promoting it. I really don't think they've done as strong of a job this year.
Absolutely.
Very mediocre.
I think that it's been a lot more under the table. The red versus black thing, it's cool. It's, you know, it's at least it's something new. But it's going to be interesting to see how that all shakes out, I think.
I will say one thing that I think is pretty cool that they've done is the whole mic'd up thing that they're putting on Twitter. Have you guys seen that? Where they're mic'ing up one guy from offense and one guy from defense, and it's about 5 minutes long. They're really letting it run. I've watched, I think, almost every one of them, and it's always cool to kind of hear how those guys interact, you know, and things of that nature. And they always think it's really cool to be the one mic'd up. They don't tell them who it is to start off, and then they kind of figure it out. And then that's when they, you know, smiles come on and everything changes.
Right. That's about 3 or 4 years ago, the University of Georgia came to me, and they were discussing actually hiring me to help with their promotions and stuff. And one of the things I said, look, if I come in and I'm part of, I think it was G-Extra at the time, or, you know, part of working with IMG.
Yeah, yeah.
So the one thing I would want to do if you bring me in is I want to mic up everybody.
Yeah.
I want to get mic up, you know, Coach Eckler. I want to get Mike Bobo, you know, Will Friend. I mean, I want to get all these guys mic'd up. You know, I want to get these players, you know, hear what, you know, get Todd Gurley, you know, in a practice. And they said, well, we can't do that. Coaches won't go for it. It's a bad idea. I mean, it's a good idea, but the coaches will never do it, and that it'll make them upset, and, you know, the kids will be self-conscious. And I'm like, no, they'll go for it. And they said that, well, you know, the coaches will never get that sort of access. Now they're doing it left and right, and I'm like, well, thank goodness.
Well,
I mean,
it's really cool feature.
It's fine. Yeah. I'm just glad you're doing it, because that's the type of insight that we've been begging for to get from UGA. We want, you know, the fans – get to see so little practice, mm-hmm. you know, and they get to read about so little of practice because, you know, the media restrictions. But giving them, at least if you're going to take away the media's ability to see it, give the fans something else. You know, give them the better interviews. Give them more in-depth pieces. Give them the mic'd up things. Give them more practice video. They do a lot of hype videos, so you at least get to see snippets of practice. And remember, these are your fans. These are people that pay your salaries, that you buy all the gear.
Correct.
We're in a restaurant here that's head-to-toe in Georgia logos. That's the way it should be.
Yep.
You know, and if you're going to say, hey, for 9 months, you're not going to get to see anything, that's ridiculous. So I'm very, you know, shout out to Georgia. And we do have issues right now with Kirby Smart, you know, clamping down on practice again, which, you know, we'll discuss that in a minute. But thank goodness there's actually some
people love
the I don't want to say promotions, but and the marketing, because I don't really see it as that.
No.
Just give the fans.
Give them something to get excited
exactly.
about.
People love Hard Knocks.
You know,
it's the same exact thing as
and
Hard Knocks.
You'll never get that same sort of exposure. But just anything.
Anything.
Because think about it. If you've gone 3 weeks without seeing a picture of Sony Michel.
And you see him yoked up. And you're like, what happened?
Then you get to see him just, you know, running drills. You're like, wow, okay. Now imagine 3 months.
Yeah.
You know, then 6 months and 9 months. So I'm glad they're doing that. And remember, once G-Day's over, we're not going to see anything until
nothing.
August.
Correct.
So.
The doldrums. Recruiting season.
Guys, I got a question. Before we move on from this topic,
yes.
And we got it in from Trey Lockridge. He said, prediction for attendance at G-Day. We were talking about this pre-show. So, Jake, we'll start with you, and we'll work our way, clockwise.
Yeah, I do think I don't think that they're going to touch 93,000 like
Absolutely
they did last
not.
Year.
No.
I think that you're probably, 50 to 60, somewhere in that ballpark, I think would be a pretty stellar day. And I do think that there's enough excitement around the program still carrying over from last year to see that. You know, guys want to get out there and see this. You know, how's Nick Chubb looking? You didn't get to see him last spring. You know, how's this offensive line coming together? How's this all kind of shaking out in the end? I think that you're going to get it somewhere between 50 and 60. There'll be excitement. There'll be noise. It'll be loud. But I don't think you're going to get 93. Roddy?
I'm going to say with the weather, I'll say 50,000. I still think you're going to get above 40. And I think they'll be optimistically, I'll say, close to 50 because you do want to see that quarterback battle.
I think that the numbers kind of get inflated for these type of events anyway, so I'll go above 50. I think they're definitely going to want to try to get above 50 on that. And 55, 60, something along those lines, like Jake said, and kind of like what Roddy said, we're right there. I think that that's perfectly fine for the spring game. And it's not something to hang your hat on. You know, I mean, it's not something that you should be embarrassed about. 55, 60,000 coming to your spring game, that's more than what had. Is it not?
Well, I don't know. I mean,
certain years they
had a lot.
Correct, then, but
of course they'd always the estimated values
correct.
Were always
very
beneficial.
I've been in the press box before when they've had 45,000 to 50,000 at a game, and it always comes down as 92. It was a full crowd, you know. Well, so, like Paul said, those
and this is going to be a rough estimate because you know it's not like everybody they've got ticket sales to monitor. Sure. So it's going to be tough. But
there's going to be a guy in the press box looking down, and he's 47, 48. Oh, that's about 53,000.
I would be very, very shocked if anybody's up in those 600 levels by sheer force.
Yeah, really, just close it off.
I agree.
Pack it in. You're going to have it on television, mm-hmm. Get everybody in the lower stands.
Let it done.
And the south side will fill up first because you can keep people out of the shade. 2 o'clock game. It could be hot as blue blazes.
It always is. Somehow that's one of the hottest days of the year. So for those of you at home, take it easy on Friday night. Do yourself the favor. Take it from me.
Just stay here at Champions and drink beer.
Yeah, yes. Good question there from Trey. I don't think any of us feel confident about 90,000 plus. I don't think that's – and I think Georgia realistically, 8-5 wasn't going to get – that done. If you were on the cusp last year, if you won the SEC title, who knows at that point.
Yeah.
But a lot of questions in that regard. So, moving on from that, though, but still staying on G-Day, and I think that's what we want to spend most of the show on, what are your main storylines? What are the things that you're looking for out of this scrimmage? What are the things that you want to see, and really, what do you think people want to see?
Okay, the insider note that people can take away from this: we've had our somebody who watched practice recently. I think it was last week.
You're gonna get this man killed.
Yes. So this guy watched practice recently, but again, not this particular. It had to be last week, and he's told me look for a lot of Sony Michel and Nick Chubb on the field at the same time, and I'm like. He said, "Well, yeah, they're gonna let it loose at G-Day." I'm like, "No, that's not gonna happen because you have one guy on one side, one on the other. One's gonna be, on the red team. One's gonna be the black team." So, some of the adjustments that I want to see Jim Chaney make for the upcoming season, and some of the tricks and stuff like that, we're not gonna see it because it's a scrimmage, And you got the number one offense, number one defense, but at the same time, you hardly ever have it so that the two best running backs are on the same.
I think they might be doing that this time, though, black thing.
Well, if they do that, then I want to see that. I want to see
that. That's the whole thing.
I want to see how comfortable Jacob Eason looks. I want to see how comfortable Jake Fromm looks. I mean, that's first time doing that. And I want to see Mecole Hardman playing offense. Okay. Nothing against Terry Godwin. We've been talking about the Eason to Godwin connection all spring. But I want to see Mecole Hardman because I keep hearing how good he looks in practice. So, from the skill guys, and I'm not – we have the offensive line. That's another whole storyline. We do a whole show on it. But to me, that is so – there's so much to come from there. In other words, we know what we're getting in the defense.
Yeah.
All the same defensive starters, are going to be there. The offensive line is a huge work in progress. Georgia's problems last year in the red zone were abysmal. Let's see if Jim Chaney has adjusted his offense. And granted, it'll be very plain, but let's see some of that stuff that – I won't say we were promised, but we're expecting.
I was going to say real quick on that. I do think if they do end up splitting the two backs, which I kind of think they will, like you said, I think that they'll do. But it's unfair to put Sony and Nick on the same team. But I do think that if they are split up, I do think there's a very good chance that you're going to end up seeing a lot of Nick Chubb. There's the possibility of seeing a lot of Nick Chubb and Brian Harrion on the field at the same time, and possibly even Sony and Elijah Holyfield. I do think that you'll see a lot of that. We've seen Harrion and Michelle especially working with the wideout group and working on their hands.
Yeah, and that was the – I won't call it exactly an insider note, but the guy that went to see it said that he saw so much more of Sony in the slot, and Nick in the backfield. And we had this question last week on the show: why aren't the two of them on the field together at the same time? And I'm like, well, because of the blocking situation. You put another running back on the field, you're saying that he's actually a better blocker than anybody else. Does it serve as a distraction? Sure, for a second.
Yeah.
And then once you realize he doesn't have the ball, the guy that was supposed to cover him is now free and clear to go make a tackle. So, putting an extra running back on there. I mean, the minute the quarterback hands off the ball, you're looking at you have 10 people on offense that are still in the play versus 11. Put another running back out there, now you have 9 versus 11. It doesn't help to have an extra running back on the field. But if that running back's in the slot, now you got to account for him because he goes out.
Yeah.
And if you don't account for him, a pass to Sony,
he's gone.
In the open field with a two-way go,
he's gone.
Yeah, it's just –
I think one thing I'm looking forward to with G-Day is once the game's over, people are going to think that the offensive line is completely terrible because the defense is going to pretty much just run over them. In my opinion.
Okay.
I think the defense is going to run over the offensive line. People are going to throw their hands up. Oh, no, what do we have here? I think it's going to be overreaction Monday. That's what's going to happen.
You're looking forward to seeing that.
Yes.
Okay.
I mean, you're going to get stops in the backfield from Ledbetter and those guys, and people are going to be like, well, we don't have an offensive line again. Not worry, my friends. There's reinforcements coming.
To that end, the storyline to me about the offensive line that I want to watch, I mean, we know Isaiah Wynn can play tackle.
Sure.
You know, we've seen that. We know Daishon can play, you know, anything you know.
Yeah. Swiss Army.
But can Lamont Galliard play center? Because there is no backup.
Right.
He's a former defensive tackle at Georgia.
Yeah.
Brandon Cablano made the switch. You know, it's such an important position. I mean, go back to when Boss got hurt against Florida and the game just went spiraled out of control. And that's nothing against Hunter Long. I love him to death. But there's a difference. If ever there was a example of what happens to having a good center versus a great center, that showed it.
Yeah.
And you need a great center in this league. And, you know, Lamont's going to have to call out the protections. He's going to have to make decisions. He's going to have to hold his own against John Atkins. And John knows how to take advantage of an inexperienced center.
Yeah.
I mean, some of the swim moves we saw in practice where he was just blowing by people. You know, John's a senior year. He's playing for a shot at the league. I'm not going to focus a lot on, you know, the guys, you know, Solomon McKinley, Pat Allen, you know, guys like that playing guard, because I know that there's five guys coming who can change the entire outlook of how that offensive line comes out.
Yeah.
But I don't really see a center coming in. So Lamont, to me, if anybody on that spot's not going to change, it's Lamont Galliard.
I think just one more thing on that offensive line, guys. If the offensive line does hold the defensive line, that's another thing that we can talk about where it's like, whoa, that might be a problem. Because then your defense, who's been around for so long.
Well, it's mostly sophomores.
Yeah, but they've all kind of played together and things of that nature. So but that's what I'm looking forward to, overreaction Monday.
they should be able to handle a hodgepodge offensive
Correct.
Line.
Yeah,
Correct.
You know, but I'm not so sure about this hodgepodge offensive
it
line.
Is. It,
what
and
are you talking
why,
about?
Here's why. It is guesswork. The thing that we keep hearing in these post-practice interviews, and I know that you got to take those for what they're worth, but the one thing that we keep hearing from those guys is how much more they're talking. How much more communication is happening across the line than last year.
And talking don't block.
Talking don't block, Jake. What are you talking about?
I'm telling you, I think that's going to be key. I think last year.
You can't talk John Atkins into not getting to the quarterback.
John, don't touch me, John.
I think you had a lot of guys out there last year playing on an island, playing by themselves.
I get what you're saying.
I think that having a cohesive unit, which I think that you've got some guys who are familiar. I mean, let's be honest with you, or let's be honest with ourselves here. Tyler Catalina came in kind of last minute. You know, he missed all of spring, I think.
Yeah.
You know, came in, was subpar, I mean, throughout the year. Wasn't obviously a SEC championship level left tackle. You know, so there was a lack of cohesion there.
Yeah, they were also facing, you know, nine guys in the box, so they were overrun.
They had a chance. I think they've had a chance to go through this spring, get a real good grasp on playing together, and they've jumbled it around enough to get guys into some comfortable spots. I don't think that the offensive line is going to be that bad. My main thing is to watch is going to be Jake Fromm, obviously. I can't wait to see him just pour gasoline on the fire of the conversation that people keep
talking
about.
There's your meltdown Monday.
Yes. You know, and that's what it's going to be. If can you imagine if Jacob Eason comes out there and he's 3-7 and Jake Fromm comes out there and he's, 6-8 and he's hitting all his spots and he's throwing beautiful.
One long pass to Mecole Hardman and it's on.
It's going to collapse. I mean, they'll run Kirby out of there on a pole, man.
No, you do bring up a good point because let's say that the ones go against the ones.
Yeah.
So you're red and Blacks, you know, they have the first string offense versus first string defense, and Eason struggles.
Yeah.
Which you would expect against, you know, he looks across
Correct.
And sees, you know, Dominic Sanders, Aaron Davis, Malcolm Parrish, DeAndre Baker. Okay, that secondary hopefully is shut down. And then, you know, whoever's playing the star that day, a Stroud defensive line, you know, Lorenzo Carter coming off the edge, Davin Bellamy coming off the edge, assuming that's how they split it up, and we don't know yet. And okay, and so he has pedestrian numbers, which you would hope, if you're a Georgia fan, that's what you want to see. You want to see a dominating defense, you know, and you want to see Easton making good decisions, taking care of the ball. But say something gets knocked down, and he does come out of it 11 of 17. And Fromm, going up against the number two defense, torches him.
Yeah.
And here's the thing, maybe on short routes.
Yeah,
you know,
sure.
A five-yard slant that picks up 55 yards. You know, an 18-yard up and out that all of a sudden, you know.
And that's where he's best. I mean, yeah. His short game is incredible.
Yeah, but then he throws for 223 yards.
Oh, sure.
You know,
sure.
with a 70% completion.
You see this smile right
yeah.
here? Do you see this?
There's your meltdown.
Yeah,
Monday.
I'm looking forward to it.
But, again, that's why I go back to when you're talking about the, you know, the storylines of it. I don't read too much into the quarterback performances of G-Day because it's not – it's usually not a fair comparison.
No, I know. You know? I'm not
– And I agree with you, but that's what I'm saying. What I really want to see is what's Jim Chaney going to give us? I mean, I expect it to be vanilla as hell, but show me that – get everybody talking in that – I don't want to say meltdown Monday, but just enthusiasm Tuesday with –
Well, if Fromm walks in and does that, enthusiasm yeah. Tuesday right here, buddy.
You know, I'm just saying that on the podcast the day after that, we're talking about, hey, did you see – Sony in the slot, take that ball to the house, you know.
Ooh,
and
yeah.
That's what I'm saying.
And what I don't think what people don't want to see is maybe Terry Godwin getting a handoff in the backfield, Nick Chubb being his lead blocker.
Yeah, you know, let's not have that.
Maybe less of that and more of Sony in
that's
the slot.
Right,
you know?
Yeah.
Give him a taste of the wrinkle. You know, let him see what we can do this. We've got some tricks up our sleeve. It's there. You know, because I feel like people thought last year that, and probably pretty fairly so, there didn't seem to be a lot of tricks up Georgia's sleeve when it came to the offense.
Oh, there were. They just were terrible tricks.
They were. They didn't work that often. And
right.
And the people would say it's so predictable, and I would bang my head against the wall. I'm like, okay, if you're predicting run versus pass, you get a 50-50 chance of getting it right. Congratulations, Mr. You know, armchair quarterback.
Yeah.
You're average. Good job. Now, you tell me who's getting the ball and which side of the field he's running to. I'll hire you to come down, sit beside me while I take pictures because I've been doing this 23 years and I have a damn hard time with any offensive head coach knowing what's going to happen. Now, if it's 3rd and 19 and Georgia doesn't want to putt it, yes, I knew they were going to – I mean, they didn't want to endanger where they were on the field. Yeah, there's going to be a draw play. I was pretty certain of that. And people would lose their minds when Bobo did it. And I'm like, look, it's because they know they can't pick up 19 yards from their own 20.
Boy.
You know, they're not going to throw it there. It's just not going to happen. So, now – from the opponent's 40, you know, 35, maybe they would. But the point being, the people that say it's so predictable, I'm like, what about those ending rounds? What about those, you know, going to the wild dog formation? They're practicing a lot of that, too. So, you know, it just drives me crazy when people call it predictable. But
well,
this year we should see – I want to see those wrinkles, you know, and for the love of Pete, get Jacob Eason out from under center.
Yeah, absolutely.
He's not good at it. He doesn't like it. George's not as effective in it. You know, I understand that you need to run it, but, hell, you know, dance with what brought you.
Yeah.
Who you brought. So,
You know what's funny to me, just to go back to what you were saying about the offensive line is talking a lot. If I was Kirby Smart and I had kind of an offensive line that wasn't really getting the job done, I would comment they're talking.
No.
Yes. That's
no
what that,
way.
Yeah.
No way.
It's like a girl. She's got great eyes. You know? It's the same thing.
She has a wonderful personality. Yeah,
here's what I'm
they talk great.
And she can block.
Yeah.
Listen, I'm at the post-practice interview. All right. I'm just going to pull that card right now. Kirby is the one that's saying –
get your facts out of here.
Kirby's the one who's saying, these guys are hitting him in the mouth. Pat Allen's bringing the wood to these guys. You know, you got Isaiah Wynn down there holding down that left tackle spot, looking great doing it. It's the guys that are talking about talking. It's the communication that you're hearing from Isaiah Wynn. Lorenzo Carter mentioned it. You know, he said when we're rushing up against these guys, he said the biggest change I've noticed from last year is how they're just shouting out the protections, and it's going up and down the line, and they're getting everything, you know, pretty well under control in that regard. I think that's very, very key for Georgia this year, and I do think that the offensive line will have a good day.
Communication. Who would have thought it? Let's come up with another question.
All right. We got a couple of questions here on recruiting, so we'll touch on some of that. That's always fun. Steve, Aronica, I believe is how I would say that. Steve, I'm sorry if I got your last name wrong, but thank you so much for sending your question in. Steve wants to know what's up with the 18 recruiting class. We talked about this a little bit yesterday. Georgia feeling like the momentum is a little stagnant. One thing they've got, though, this weekend to look forward to, Georgia fans, is Brenton Cox. And we've had some people ask for some predictions on that. Either of you two guys got a big got a good sense on how that's going to shake out?
I'm going to go 50-50 between Ohio State and Georgia. My sources, the people I've spoke to, have not given me a definitive one way or the other. And that's not one of those situations where we have the story in admin and the quotes ready. And
when does that happen?
Not that it ever happens. But, no, this is a situation where, I mean, now, granted, I pay these guys to be to do recruiting stuff. So I would give it to them. But sometimes I get a hint or an idea from one school or the other. Ohio State loves their chances. But, you know, Brenton Cox has been penciled into Georgia for some time. On our last show, when people were complaining about the 2018 class, and we said, hey, don't worry about it until you start seeing major Georgia targets picking elsewhere.
Right.
You know, in other words, losing Miles Sims to Michigan was not that big a deal. You lose Brenton Cox to Ohio State.
Being worried.
It's panic time. You know, and there's a possibility that that happens. We should probably call Chad and get him in here. But you guys give me your take, because I haven't heard anything one way or the other.
I think his Ohio State visit went great, and I think it was one of those post-visit excitement Mondays. You get back from your visit, and I think that kind of took hold and all of that. I think the big thing for Georgia, though, they're having him on campus for G-Day before he makes his decision, and they're going to get the last word. He's going to have to tell them no before he leaves.
Yeah, if he picks Ohio State before that – then, I mean, not should say before that, but after getting the red carpet treatment on G-Day, if he still picks Ohio State,
that's a panic
for a guy
move.
That was, well, let's call it what it was. He's a Georgia lean for months. And then at that point, Georgia's done everything they can. Mm-hmm. Don't get me wrong. I'm not saying that this is a Georgia problem. But then you just say hats off to Urban Meyer and his staff. For in one weekend, they could flip the kid to Ohio State. That's damned impressive.
Yeah, I agree. And you know, if I'm picking today, I still feel good about Georgia's chances, only because he made the move to say, I will come to G-Day first. I think that means he came out on Twitter today and was very adamant and said, no decision has been made. I'm still considering.
Yeah, a lot of people already had him penciled into Ohio State.
Right. Yeah. I believe Britton when he says that. I think that he really is, considering that, you know, I had a chance to speak with him at the opening in Atlanta at Buford High School, and he mentioned, you know, Georgia wanting him to be one of those guys like Richard LeCount that people have wanted so long in this class.
He absolutely
would be. He's a player of that caliber. He's got that kind of personality. He's got that magnetism. He knows everybody in state. You know, and Adam Anderson, a great player in state, tucked away in Rome. And also, that's just not his personality. No. He's a lot quieter guy. You know, reminds me a little bit more of a Nick Chubb approach to to business. Brenton, on the other hand, very vocal guy, very fun guy, guy with a big personality. I think that's got to be pretty appealing for him. And really, like you said, Georgia, if they lose Cox, it's a panic mode. So I'm not saying he's a must get, but
he's close.
He's real close. Yeah,
he's really
razor
close.
Thin because he.
Well, that's just one guy. What about Trey Dean?
Trey Dean, I think, is probably the other guy who's most likely, I would say, to commit in the next, I don't know, month or so. I love Georgia's chances with Trey. I think Trey.
Yeah, tell everybody who he is.
Okay, Trey Dean, four-star safety out of Dutchtown. If you don't know where Dutchtown is, it's a little bit. I don't know what you're doing.
He's big. He's kind of big.
Yeah, but you mimicking him is not going to get it done.
Oh, yeah, true.
Dutchtown, a little around. It's like down in the Lovejoy area. You know, kind of. Oh my God, Southeast Atlanta. Trey Dean, you know, a four-star guy, like I said, and another guy, very vocal. One of the things I love most about Trey, probably more than any kid I've covered in the last 4 years, I guess that I've been doing this, probably the most open to criticism of any kid I've ever met in my career. He, you know, if I see him at a camp.
So you enjoy criticizing kids, is what you're saying?
Yes, I love it. I've made a living out of it. In fact.
I love to just rip these kids a new one every time I talk to him.
What I mean, though, is like when I go see him at a camp, he'll send me a text and say, hey, what can I work on? What did you see? What do you want to see? What do you want to see more of? What could I improve on? I love that about Trey. He's always been a very strong Georgia lean. And I remember talking to him I guess it was the Rivals. It was the Rivals Underclassmen Challenge last summer. Was one of the first times I caught up with him. And no, I take that back. I'm sorry. I saw him when he was a rising ninth grader. He came to Mark Rick Camp.
That's right.
He was out there that day, and was balling. I mean, yeah. It was clear at that time he was going to be a player. We got in contact at that time. Saw him again at Underclassmen Challenge last summer. All he could talk about was Georgia. Man, you know, I want to stay home. It reminded me a lot of William Poole. You know, I know that he kind of had some back and forth with Florida there for a little while. But once he was committed, man, he was so on board and just so heavy.
Never
Georgia.
Wavered.
Never wavered. I think Trey's a kid very much like that, and I think that that's a role that he can fulfill. Trey Dean, Brenton Cox, two guys you definitely need to keep up. Rhett Carroll, thank you. Henry County was the place I was looking for. Yeah, Lovejoy down around there, down Dutchtown, very close to there.
Let's go with Pete Ellis here.
Pete Ellis?
Oh, boy, Pete.
I love controversies. Let's jump right into
it.
He said Zamir White to Alabama or Georgia spring game this Saturday.
All right, now let's give a quick rundown of Zamir because not everybody follows the recruiting game that heavily. If you don't know Zamir,
boy,
please get to right now. Go Google Zamir White, Rivals. Five-star running back, number one running back in the nation out of Laurinburg, North Carolina, Scotland County High School.
His nickname is Zeus.
He's a beast. I mean,
for good reason.
Yeah, he is. He's just one of those guys that it's clear he's Najee Harris. He's Todd Gurley. I mean, you watch the kid's film.
Henry,
Derrick Henry. You watch the kid's film and you know there's really no question that he's going to be able to translate that game to the next level. Georgia, a major player there, have been for a long, long time.
We have Georgia as his leader.
We do. And I,
that could change.
And I feel comfortable about that. I think that that's warranted. I think that, based on everything we've gotten from him, from coaches near him, all intel points to Georgia being the lead. It's not at all going to surprise me if he goes to Alabama for A-Day.
Right.
And the reason I say that is because he's put in several visits to Georgia. Not that he's never been to Bama, but, why not go check it out? You know what Georgia's about at this point. You could come out and you could see the crowd, but with a guy like that, how much is that really going to influence his decision? How much is that going to factor in? He knows what Georgia has to offer from a depth chart standpoint. He knows what they're offering in terms of how he fits into the offense. I think Alabama makes a lot of sense for him to go check out what they've got.
Yeah, and we know he's not committing anytime soon.
Exactly,
so.
Exactly. He's a junior.
So that makes perfect sense.
Yeah. I'm going to pick him to go to A-Day this weekend. I that's just what my gut tells me. That's not inside information. If he comes to Georgia, hey, there's a lot for fans to celebrate and be happy about, that's for sure. But I wouldn't stake on it just yet.
Does it seem to you like, the visitors for 2018, the list for G-Day is not as full as it was for last year?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay.
No question.
I'll just make sure.
No
we
doubt.
Were, yeah.
You know, I think that part
well,
of it.
Well, there's no concert.
Right. Everybody was trying to get that free lunatic last year, man.
Yeah.
No, I think that part of that is, there's a bit of a lack of hype around the game, just in general, things like that spill down. But also, too, a lot of these guys who are major targets of Georgia, KJ Henry's, Trey Dean, I'm saying these guys that they've been so many times already.
Yeah.
It's not like they're going to pull a lot of guys, I don't think, from out of state. A guy like Brennan Eagles, we know that he's coming from Texas. So he's a guy to watch out for. But, they've been working so heavily out of state this year. I don't know that you're going to draw a lot of those kids.
But go back to this. What did we find out from some of the camps last year? And G-Day especially. When you have 100 of the top players come to Georgia for G-Day and you're still putting on a game, you're still putting on a practice, your actual amount of time with each guy is limited. So what if they – every time you and I go to practice, we look down the sideline, hey, there's Quinn Williams, or hey, there's, Joe Milton, big targets for Georgia up and down the sidelines. They have – I don't want to say a handler, but they have a host from Georgia side by side with them who spends the entire day with them. you know, and that person gets undivided attention and they get to watch Georgia practice. What is G-Day? A big practice. Do you get to see Georgia go one-on-one in practice? Absolutely. Do you get to see 11-on-11? Yes. So, in other words, maybe it's more beneficial for Zamir White to come in and catch a scrimmage, you know, in the stadium like he did last weekend, or, you know, catch a Tuesday practice than it is to be here for G-Day. You'd get to spend a lot more time with him. And I'm not trying to, you know, put a positive spin on it. I'm just saying if you do get, you know, let's keep the numbers realistic. I think last year they had almost 25 Rivals 250 guys. I think
yeah.
we were
oh,
looking
it was
at
a
we're,
ton. Yeah.
we're like right at 10%. Or,
yeah.
And I think an inch higher than that with some late-minute guys who came in. And every one of them raved about, oh, 93, it was great. Well, you know you're not getting that this year. And what did Kirby do? He had just been hired 3 months ago, and everybody he talked to, he invited them to G-Day.
Yep.
Every kid.
I want to
he
get
made
to know
a
you.
Personal plea, yep. come to G-Day. And I think what wound up happening is they had too many.
Yeah.
It was too successful. And right now, would they want to have 25 top 250 players? Absolutely. But at the same time, if you've had all those guys visiting, like, you know, Joe Milton was just here, do you need to have him again? I mean, is it imperative? Yeah, you want him. But you're not going to sell out to say, look, you know, it's imperative that you come because hopefully you made your pitch when he had time to sit down for an hour with Jim Chaney in the quarterback's room and you made it known how badly he was needed.
Yep. And the reality of the situation, I think, too, as compared to last year is, I mean – other than tight end, they were recruiting every single position
yeah.
last year. It was wide open. I mean, this year the focus is a lot more narrow. You know you're not going to take six linemen again. You know, or five linemen again. You know you're not going to take you're not going to take seven defensive backs, but they've got 35 plus offers out. But you're probably not going to take that many again. You've got to be a little more judicious in this class. And like you said, that focus, spending time with those guys and devoting it, I think that may even end up being a change we see in the recruiting philosophy this year.
I was told that point blank. You know, that's what they were going to do. So
be a lot more thorough with your top targets. Get those guys in. Rich Olenek says, these Yahoos don't know what they're talking about. Zeus is coming to Athens on Saturday. Hey. I know everybody hopes so,
yeah.
We'll definitely let you know if he does.
Indeed.
I don't care to say that I was wrong on that.
Stay tuned to UGASports.com for that one.
And Luke Kicklayer asks, Roddy, will you be around after the St. Mary's speaking event? I will be down at St. Mary's speaking next Tuesday, so anybody that wants to come by, the Wee Pub in St. Mary's, the Irish bar. We'll be giving a talk down there at 7:00. I will stick around afterwards to, during the actual speaking event, I tell you everything we know. So, but yeah, we'll stick around there, Luke. So please come by. He's a great member of UGA Sports, as are most of these names I see on here. So, appreciate everybody being a member there. And one more time, I want to remind everybody, please come in to Champy's World Famous Fried Chicken. Get the tamales while you're here. Come to this Saturday. That's just imperative. That's job one for anybody that enjoys watching the show. And if you come in on Fridays, you can get the crawfish.
Yeah, crawfish.
I'm just saying.
I've never really had crawfish, to be quite honest with you.
He can no longer do the show.
What?
He's never had crawfish.
I've never fired this.
Next week it'll be me, Dave McMahon, and Jake Roos.
And we'll have a big clean crawfish.
And Paul Meharry will have to eat crawfish in front of us.
Did want to remind, just confirmed, that was what I was doing with my headset off, confirmed with our friend Josh of Champy's. They will have the tailgate boxes available on Saturday.
Fantastic.
So, if you're coming into town, you're looking to post up on campus somewhere.
Hey, Josh, do they have to call ahead for those?
Preferably call ahead here to Champy's. Anyway, if you don't call ahead and you want to come in here and get some, they'll hook you up. They got
for
you
sure.
hooked up with some.
They got you.
If you've never had it, oh, my God.
Do it for yourself. Is Roddy drinking Diet Dr. Pepper? Mitchell Davis wants to know.
Are you?
Yes. I'll drink it over here off camera so I don't get 11 Alive in trouble.
All right. Now, one thing I did want to make sure that we touched on, and I know that people, don't give the media a lot of sympathy in these situations, but it's been one of the big storylines of the day, and that's Kirby Smart issuing the injury restrictions, the reporting on
moratorium.
Injury restrictions. Yeah, essentially, if you haven't been following the story today, Smart issued a statement basically dictating.
Well, he didn't issue a statement. He just said, there's a new
rule.
Here's a rule. No statement.
Basically, the statement or the rule is if you see an injury on the practice field, you cannot report that, which was something that was
not so much an injury, an injured player.
An injured player.
Right.
Yeah, so it's even worse, yeah.
Yes.
Well, I was going to start with if you see an injury happen on the field, because that's where this was all born out of.
Correct.
For those of you who were following along last week, D'Angelo Gibbs, there was a shoulder issue that he had. I think that Kirby was upset that the media ran with it because his family had to find out through that. I understand that. That's pretty reasonable.
No
qualms. I can get down with that. However, the new rule includes that we can't report guys in black jerseys, which means they're no contact, which means they're obviously got something going on, some issue.
Yeah.
Or we can't report on guys who are on the sidelines and working with trainers or riding the bike or anything like that. It's limiting access, and I get that. The Freedom of Information Act was one of the first things that they kind of got pushed through. When they arrived to campus, when this staff came,
the change where you can't get information from the athletic association for 90 days. Well, in other words, they can give it to you whenever they want, but they have 90 days to respond instead of the usual 3. And not to rehash that, but, I mean, there's no other part of the government, to my knowledge, that has such a leeway. Why is it, university athletics?
Right.
That's a ridiculous rule. But going back to the issue with Kirby, I understand the media should not report a injury that happens right in front of them until the family's been notified or the severity of the injury has been determined. Granted. It could hurt a kid's future.
Sure.
All of a sudden you go, hey, it looked like he tore his ACL, and maybe he's a senior going to the draft, and, that report pops up, and trust me, I've been to the draft, and I've seen how these guys are checked over. I get it. So that part I understand waiting to find word from UGA. But to say that we go out on a Thursday, and all of a sudden Nick Chubb's in a black jersey, which means he's in a non-contact, that means something happened last Tuesday at practice. So between Tuesday and Thursday, something happened and it was determined that in the upcoming practice, he should be in non-contact. Okay, well, at that point, to say you guys have to sit on until you talk to Kirby. Well, now what if we don't get Kirby after practice?
Correct.
Okay, and what if Saturday it's closed? Like they had one, the first Saturday of practice it was closed and there was no discussion with Kirby. We'd have to wait till the following Tuesday, hopefully, to get Kirby, and if we don't get him that Tuesday because, we're getting players, maybe it's the following Thursday. So we're talking, 7 to 9 days to report that a starter is out. That's bullshit. I mean, and that's nothing against Kirby. It's just it comes to a point where you say, look, if we're – you either practice is open or closed.
Sure.
If we go out there and we see something with our own eyes, we can report that he's in a non-contact jersey. Now, Kirby says he's at a competitive disadvantage. Okay, that's – I don't understand. I don't see how.
Right.
Especially in spring.
Correct.
I don't know that the red team or the black team will move ahead, but at some point you have to say, look, either you guys can report what you see or not. I do understand making a allowance for the parents to be notified and Ron Corson to
completely
check out an injury. I'm not saying that if it happens in front of them. And here's the thing. I know the media gets no sympathy in this, and people say, well, you shouldn't report what you see. Well, okay, that's kind of silly, but I don't want to be the guy who's, finds out that my son was injured from somebody else.
Sure.
But it's either open or closed, And to start saying, well, you guys can report this, but not that. Well, if you say, you say we can't report on what we see on injuries, well, then can we report who catches the ball?
Right.
Who made a tackle?
Right. Correct.
Because once you start determining that stuff, it's a very slippery slope. And the media got together and they told Kirby Smart, we don't agree with that.
Yeah.
Well, they told Claude Felton, who told Kirby. And then Kirby met with the beat writers after practice on Tuesday. And, hopefully we've got something worked out. But the overall point is where you're going to try to limit what happens, what's being reported after going from, you know, practice used to be open for like an hour, then it's down to 40 minutes, then it's down to 30 minutes. Now, when you came to practice the other day, we had 7 minutes prior to a scrimmage. And to say, okay, whatever you see out here, you know, this is report, you can report this, but not this. You can report this, but not this.
Yeah, it feels like you have to take your little reporter's notebook over and make sure everything's okay before you walk off the field.
And I'm not saying that that would happen, but we're getting to that point because everything is technically in some possible way a competitive disadvantage. Now, apparently it's okay for the NFL because they have to report injuries. You know, these are not NFL kids. I say kids. I mean, some of these guys have children of their own, but I don't say that we have to have the same rules as the NFL. In other words, an injury happens in front of us, we don't report it. But I've been doing this 23 years. I can count on one hand the number of injuries I've seen happen in front of us.
Right.
You know, the Gibbs thing was a fluke.
What gets me about it, I think the aspect of it that I just don't understand is how often have we found out something – you know, from somebody who's been watching a scrimmage or been, you know, a booster who's been at a practice, who comes to either a message board such as the Dog Vent and puts that information out there, or they just go to Twitter or Facebook or you know, the stuff.
Or text me like I got texted. I mean, I know who was out today.
Right.
Okay, I didn't report it, but I know today, Tuesday.
The stuff gets out.
There's a name that we didn't report previously. That's in a black jersey today.
Yeah.
Now, will he be there Tuesday? I mean, Thursday? We don't know.
Sure.
You know? And
will we even be able to see it? We don't know.
Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, because I didn't see it with my own eyes, I'm not going to report. Now, do I trust this person? Absolutely. Has this person helped me break news before? Yes. But, you know, I don't know how bad it is. I'll keep it to myself, you know, while we get this thing worked out with Kirby. But, in other words, what's going to happen is you keep locking down practice. I mean, we talk to the same five players every week. What happens is the public's desire to know, in other words, you create a vacuum.
Correct.
There's no information. There's less and less information. People still want to talk about it. People still want to tune into a show like this. People still want to read the message boards. People will start to fill in with information that becomes very sketchy. Like you said, if practice is closed, then why is a booster there?
Right.
You know? Why is a high school coach there?
Sure.
You know?
Sure.
Why are other people allowed to go to a public university? Either practice is closed and nobody can see it, or practice is open. Now, if you want to have a deal where, look, we can't have you guys out here watching practice and putting out the fact that we got the flea flicker and we practiced it 50 times, you know, fine. I get that. We don't want us to see it. I get it. But at the same time, you have to set at least – you have to give – the fans something, because it's not the media.
Correct.
The media is just an extension of the fans.
Correct.
I'm not saying we're elected to do it, but who are we giving this to?
Yeah.
You know, that was
this isn't
point
for our own good, you know.
Correct.
I don't I don't turn to give all this information to my son and we're like, woo, yay, dad, you know.
Yeah, I never bust through the door and grab my girlfriend and say, you'll never believe who was in a black jersey today, you know.
Yeah. We're doing it for the fans, and you know, we have tens of thousands of people that are subscribers to UGA Sports that read what we have, and we are basically their extension. We give them the information. Are we getting rich off of it? No. People are like, oh, you.
Hey, look, but if you want to contribute, maybe one day we could. I don't know.
But the idea that, you know, because we like to report the good stuff as well. You know, we like to report that
Harian's carrying the ball his freshman year, you know, and things,
you know,
like that.
Because people, and just the positive stuff. I mean, to me, the best thing that we had all year was when we got to watch an extra 20 minutes of practice, no video, no cameras.
Oh, that was awesome.
And we got to report, you know, one-on-ones.
Yeah.
You know?
That was great.
And now, like I was just pointing out earlier in the show, the fact that Lamont Galliard is the center and there's no backup. Because what did we see against the backup? We saw John Atkins just taking him to school. And I don't know if it was Swilly or who else was back there. Whoever was in that spot was just getting abused. So now the fans know, if something happens to Georgia's starting center in the G-Day game or going forward, there's a problem.
But now the coaches for other SEC teams know too.
They've known that from the beginning. They're like, they don't have one, you know?
Yeah.
So it's
My hope,
and just to be clear, Dash checked on this today. The only similar policy he could find, I think he talked to about 15 different beat riders at different schools. The only similar policy he could find was Florida State had a similar injury reporting policy. That means Alabama doesn't have it, Michigan doesn't have it, LSU doesn't have it,
Clemson
have
it.
Seems like it's working okay. Seems like those guys are doing something right, and I don't know that. Holding stuff back is the answer.
Anyway, let's move on.
All right. Actually, we've been on here quite a bit of time.
We have.
So
we have
let's we're getting long winded. So you wanna begin the sign off here, Roddy? I guess.
Absolutely. I just want to let everybody know to tune in next week, 8:30, for the next episode of UJ Sports Live. Be sure to follow 11 Live Sports. That's where you're on that page now. If you're watching it. If you're listening to the podcast, be sure when you click into Facebook next time to read all your political posts that you click switch over to 11 Live Sports and click like. Give them the thumbs up, if you will. And also swing by the UGASports.com Facebook page. Give us a like as well. If you want more information about recruiting, if you want more information about the team, swing by UGASports.com. That's where it's all at. It's a fantastic resource for more news than you'll find anywhere else. A shout out to Muhammad Massaqua.
Yeah.
Hope he recovers completely from the injury that he had riding a Razor 1000.
Those things are dangerous, man.
Well, they can be.
Yeah, they
can also be a whole lot of fun.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I wasn't going there, but yeah.
They can be a lot of fun.
Yeah, they sure can.
For Paul Meharry and Jake Roos, I'm Roddy DeBulsey at UGA Sports. Thank you so much for tuning in.
Thanks, guys.
That's it for this episode of the UGA Sports Live Podcast. Tune in next week for more Georgia Bulldogs news and notes from Athens.